Take a drive with us tonight here on the Leela Muller Podcast as we go down Charlie Sheen memory lane. And in that memory lane, we look at the 1986 classic vengeance horror action film. The one, the only, The Wraith. Also starring, of course, Twin Peaks' own Sherilyn Fenn and, of course, Nick Cassavetes playing the bad guy in this amazing film that was inspired by High Plains Drifter, and then it also inspired the character of Eric Draven in The Crow.
SCP waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that movie on the Leela Muller.
And welcome to the one, the only Leela Muller podcast live here on FPN's, of course, amazing channel discussing everything 80s action movies and more. Of course, we celebrate everything 80s, 90s, noughties. And even now, if there's a good action movie out there, we'll chat about it. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and I hope you enjoyed the last couple of episodes, particularly looking at Jackie Chan's The Protector. We've also looked at, obviously, Brotherhood of the Wolf. Again, getting quite a bit of feedback about that movie in particular, being a bit of a, a benchmark, if you like, in the early 2000s, and of course, starring Mark Dacascos. Tonight, we're going to be chatting about The Wraith, which we'll get into later, of course. This is one I was able to find for only $5. I haven't seen the Blu-ray around, but I have seen this DVD. This is a newer edition out here in Australia, which, to be honest, we haven't really got a good edition of out here until this one. So this is a great pack you can get. And this is through, actually, not an online system, this one. This was actually at a shopping center where it had basically a prop-up shop display of hard-to-find DVDs and stuff like that. Found things like Missing in Action 2. We found the ultimate moustache movie, as everyone says, Shadow Riders, starring, of course, Sam Elliott and the big man himself, Tom Selleck, playing brothers in it from the Civil War. There's also, of course, Crossroads, the ultimate guitar rocking movie, of course, with Steve Vai and the Karate Kid himself in it as well. Great movie, actually, really, really good. Basically, it's the Karate Kid with guitars. but a lot of fun. So tonight we're going to get into that and view different things in the news as well. So we'll get straight into that after this. Just let you know how you can find the one, the other Leela Muller podcast, of course, on FPN.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name's Gowan. Follow the Leela Muller here on Fandom Podcast Network's master channel at fpnet.podbean.com, or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. And also check out The Muller Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Leela Muller. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, the Leela Muller, at The Leela Muller on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So the easiest way to get onto the podcast itself is to subscribe to, of course, Fandom Podcast Network. You can find us at fpnet.podbean.com or on the Podbean app. That's basically where we have all of our shows on there, from the Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast, to Culture Clash, which is your place to find all the latest news, reviews, rumors, and, of course, reviews of everything from comic book, film, characters, and more. Kevin and Cole, the founders of the show, go on there and really give you everything up to date that they can. They're also the founders of this channel as well. You can also find my other shows on there, the Muller Guild, a Dune fan podcast on there, as well as Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, with, of course, my co-host, Mark Newbold. Also, he comes from, of course, Fantha Treks as well, as I do over there. So go and check out Fantha Treks as well. You can also find that at Fantha Treks on, of course, Twitter. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network, also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also find it on Facebook and Instagram as well, on there as too. Now you can find me, the Lethal Mullet, at the Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But I'm going to be focused a lot more on Twitter, folks, because it seems to be a lot more people talking about film there and less on Instagram. We do some, but not as much, because people are just basically posting their selfies and, you know, occasionally some stuff on there. So you'll predominantly find, if you want to chat to us on Twitter and Facebook, particularly the Facebook page, as we're doing now, live shows you'll find on there too from time to time. So, now it's time for the latest action news from the cinema and martial arts movies and more, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. The other stuff we're going to talk about today quickly is music related from the 80s, and this is a band I've been following for years. They're avant-garde, they're metal, they're jazz, they're pretty much every sound, they're even techno. There's, of course, Mike Patton's band, Mr. Bungle. They have a brand new album out, which is just all kinds of amazing. I will leave a link to the Spotify itself on the Facebook page here, and go and check it out. It's great. It's basically the band from the 80s, Trevor Dunn, the whole lot of them, with Mike, who this band that when they bring those things, it's amazing. So you look at things like, they bring the jazz element in, and it's everything. I mean, these guys are session guitarists. They're just and session musicians in general. Just truly amazing. Their skill levels, everything. But what they bring to town is this music that is at one time metal, and then it takes a detour, it goes to jazz, goes to ballads, then it can go completely to a symphony sound as well. Or even circus music. It's everything. So they've had three albums that came out 20 years plus ago. One in the 80s, one in the 90s, and one in 1999 as well, which was, of course, California, which was a piss take at, of course, Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication, which came out at that time, because it's been a rivalry of those bands for years, and I still think Mr. Bungle is the better band. As good as Red Hot Chili Peppers are fantastic, and they always have been, but these guys are the better musicians, and in some ways, more entertaining. I got to see Mr. Bungle years ago at the Disco Volante Tour in 1995, going into 96, he hit Australia. And just some of the gigs they did out here were just fantastic. And again, they don't stick to their repertoire as such. They move and meld, and they're improvisational. So the music grows and evolves. It's a living organism. I have to check it out. Of course, Mike Patton is a perfect example of a man that has so many projects going on, from Fantomas to... obviously his own solo work to Faith No More, which was a huge band out here in the 80s and 90s from the States, from San Francisco. So we really enjoyed his work as an artist, and we still continue to. This band, though, also has additional metal members of Scott Ian from Anthrax, of course, the bald man with the amazing goatee and the great shredding licks. And, of course, Dave Lombardo of Slayer, the double kicker extraordinaire. If you haven't checked it out, you have to. It is an amazing album. And again, it has a title with the Easter Bunny in it. So I'll put all those links up there because it's a nice surprise for you to check out. So, the other news going around, of course, as we mentioned, there's quite a few different things we're going to be adding over the next couple of weeks when we can sync up with some of the other guest hosts that are going to be on. Kevin Reisel will be joining me for a look at the amazing Quigley. That's right, this little bad boy Western classic. Yeah, we love Quigley over here, folks. Yeah, we love it because he's got guns. And one hell of a big Sharps Buffalo one. And of course, we're talking about the amazing Simon Winsor directed film, which we've talked about in a couple of episodes earlier that we're going to get into. And of course, Simon Winsor, known for, of course, Lonesome Dove, The Phantom, and of course, an Australian classic, which you guys really need to check out. It's called The Light Horseman. Very big Aussie World War One classic about the Battle of Beersheba, where, of course, there's the last massive cavalry charge of the Australians, and it is beautifully shot. And there's even an amazing actor in it that unfortunately had an ill-fated car accident just after the film, but he's tipped to be the next Mad Max. That's right, the next Mel Gibson. So we'll do an episode on that soon, because I think it's one that not a lot of people outside of Australia have seen, but it is beautifully shot. And every bit as good as, of course, Gallipoli, which starred Mad Max himself, of course, Mel Gibson. So you check that out. Now, there's a couple of others here that we've been looking at. Obviously, Sidekicks we did a couple episodes ago now. This is great. It really is worth reviewing and checking out. Just as I mentioned in the last episode, the quality's not quite there with the one that's out there too. Now, a couple of people have asked to do this one, so we probably will. The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, we will do in a couple of weeks' time, maybe in towards Christmas. It's a bit of a classic. Obviously, it's a comedy. A bit of action in it too, directed by Rennie Harlan, and this is the movie that gave him basically the impetus to get in and try Die Hard, the sequel. Die Hard 2, Die Harder, Die Hardest, Die Another Day, whatever you call it. It's one of those two. We are tipping to possibly cover a couple of these forgotten classics, No Mercy and The Hitman. No Mercy's quite good. I enjoyed it for what it is, particularly with the bad guy, and The Hitman is just all kinds of awesomeness. So stay tuned, we will cover those as well. And one that a dear friend of the show has asked for, of course, that is the Patrick Swayze classic Black Dog, which came out in, what was it, 2003 or 98, 99, something like that. This is a great one, of course, action thriller, but you have everyone in it that's really interesting. Like, who would you have in it other than Randy Travis and Meatloaf? Well, actually, they're pretty damn good in it. I'm going to get to them. It's not the exact cast that you want, but I mean, I tell you what, these are others that are just bang on the mark, I tell you, folks. So, without a doubt, it is a time to get hard merchandise, hard media, because it's going, folks. You're not going to see this stuff out there much longer. It's going to go. It's going to vanish. As we move towards, obviously, streaming being such a huge part of our daily lives and part of what's coming, streaming has literally taken over. So if you're after something that you know you're not going to be able to get, there's no way you're going to be able to get those, you know, films into the life of obviously streaming. So some of them just don't have the film companies behind them anymore. Out here in Australia, we have a lot of HBO-related stuff we can't get because, of course, unless you have the cable channel, Foxtel, here in Australia, it's just not available. It is not available, folks. That's right. So what we do, though, is we have different streaming ones that are starting to buy those off, whether it's Stan out here in Australia, Netflix, and others. So eventually they'll come about, and we'll get to see some of those too. And, oh, g'day, Tommy Caldwell, all the way from, of course, Canada, my dear friend, and Hitchcock nut, mate. Knows everything when it comes to Alfred Hitchcock, and I'll tell you what, if you're a film lover, if you're a film goer, you need to check out his podcast. And guess where it is? It's on FPN, folks. That's right, the Fandom Podcast Network. So, cheers to Tommy. Now, one of the things, too, that I'm finding with a lot of this streaming that's happening, too, sporadically you'll get stuff on Tubi, Disney, Stan, Netflix out here, or even Prime. Of course, Prime's doing really well with that, too, by the way. Pick of the bunch for me is Prime. Prime, you're getting different action movies from the 90s, which are just non-existent on hard formats. So some of those, the Pierce Brosnan action movies that he did with, of course, Alexandra Paul and, of course, Patrick Stewart, which were really good. They kind of, I kind of feel like they were the ones that were veering in towards James Bond and where that would go. So that's interesting, whether that, you know, is going to continue. We're going to get to see TV movies even that are coming back, you know, through the format, and that's the way we're going to get those. But with Prime, I'm finding it is the bigger budget ones that are coming across too. So not just the more big grade sort of stuff that is, you know, defunct companies that don't have movies anymore, heading towards Tubi, the free route of movies. But Tubi still got some gems in there. Apart from the martial arts classics, it's probably one of the best streaming platforms for Australians to check out Hong Kong action movies that they've never seen before, whether Shaw Brothers or not. One of the best ones to check out on there too is Hell Comes to Frogtown. Right? And of course, we're talking about a certain amazing wrestler. Come on, folks. You know who I'm talking about. Who is also in They Live. That's right. That's who I'm talking about. And of course, those films are still, you know, not available on formats that are, you know, non-streaming. So it's the time to check it out. But if you can find it, get it. I mean, that's how we're getting some of these, like Quigley. I dare say it's very hard to find in the States. Very hard to find. Because Umbrella Entertainment, that's right. Umbrella Entertainment .films is where you can find it. Or Umbrella ent.com.au, so Australian company, I gather, putting out these classics in different DVD bundles. So if you can't find them in the States, a lot of these ones, Light Horseman, things like that, I dare say check out Umbrella Entertainment because they are sort of servicing that sort of area. They may be able to get it out to you, whether in the States, the UK, or anywhere else out in the globe, folks, because we all have to enjoy our action movies. All right, so that's it for the news, folks. Let's get into this movie, eh? Into, of course, the bar here at Lethal Mullet. All righty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, chat, action movies and more here on the Lethal Mullet podcast. All right, so welcome to the Lethal Pub. As we get in today, we're going to be chatting about the 1986 classic. And this is an independent action fantasy sci-fi interesting film. I'll give it that. I've seen it a number of times on TV and seen it on cable. But to see it on a brand new, beautiful looking poster too, by the way, on the front there of the Wraith. It is fantastic. Of course, it's got some great actors in it, which we'll go into the cast soon. But because we already know this is a Charlie Sheen movie, but there's great ones like Nick Cassavetes, for example, who's become not only a producer, but a great director. You can see a lot of his work still done, both in TV and film. Sherilyn Fenn, of course, from Twin Peaks. And, of course, Randy Quaid's actually really good in this as the sheriff. So this is a little bit of a Western in some ways. It's like the hero, like Shane, that comes in at the end of the street and straightens everything out and then takes off again. Or, more importantly, like High Plains Drifter. Particularly given the setting that this is in, Tucson, Arizona. Now, if we know anything about Arizona, Tucson, old Tucson's the place where they used to do all the movies still. I think they still got a studio there, folks, so that's one to check out. But what's interesting about that is that it's a Western setting. You know, it's a classic. In this case, they're replacing, obviously, the horses with cars, so that's one of the ones, too. It's directed by Mike Marvin, and he does a fantastic commentary, by the way. If you haven't checked out this new DVD release, there's a beautiful commentary on there, which really gets into his troubles making the movie, troubles with budget in particular, back in the 80s, and then just trying to work with the producers. This was produced by John Kemeny. And again, it's a great movie by New Century. It was brought out, and later it was be called New Century Entertainment Corporation. So again, one that brought this out, and I only really remember it, I suppose, as one of his movies. Obviously, it's a little bit like The Crow and High Plains Drifter. It tells a tale of revenge, basically. So it tells the story of a teen that's killed mysteriously. Don't know exactly what goes on about it, but you know somebody's been killed. Then all of a sudden, that killed person returns and comes back as basically an otherworldly form. Or it could be an alien, or it could be a zombie. We don't know. And it's kind of left up to you to figure out. And it's a little bit like, again, High Plains Drifter. It's you are the one that has to figure it out what this is and how it's played quite well. Particularly we, like The Crow, was told more from the bad guy's perspective because, again, they're entertaining characters. We're doing the same here with Nick Cassavetes and, of course, Clint Howard and the rest of the gang, too, that have there, too. So the film itself opens up with these amazing strobing lights across the sky, which, classic, when I first saw it, it kind of looked straight up Close Encounters. I mean, obviously, this is not CGI stuff they're doing this. This is all done in camera, and it looks fantastic. And then we see a bright spark collision, and the collision happens with this car that comes out of nowhere. And, of course, it's the Dodge M4S, and it's this concept car, Turbo Interceptor, which is just, again, all kinds of awesome and a little bit different than what was going around at the time. Obviously, I think this film is heavily influenced by another car movie, of course. Hang on, folks. I've got it here. I'll bring over the micro one because it's smaller, and you'll know exactly what I mean when it comes into frame. Oh, yes, the Interceptor. Notice that, Turbo Interceptor. That's right, Mad Max. And he says it in, Mike says it in the commentary itself. He says it was a big influence, obviously, on calling it that. The original name of this film was Turbo Interceptor. So, obviously, there's a little bit of that in there, too. Considering that Mad Max is, in its heart, a revenge film as well, although the revenge happens very, very late in the game. And again, with Toka, we get to see everything told from these amazing bad guys, these villains that kind of get humanized to a certain extent, and we get to really enjoy who they are and what they stand for too. So we have this set all the way over Arizona with Packard Walsh, played by, of course, Nick Cassavetes, basically being the top dog in these car races and stuff like that. And what he does is he basically kills off his opponents. So he is the one that's doing all the bad stuff, basically. And the cops can't put a pinch on him, and everyone's afraid of him, so they just do as they're told. And that's basically the moral of the story, is that the guy coming back to dead wants him dead. So it's same story that we've heard a thousand times. High Plains Drifter, same thing. Is it the brother or the ghost that comes back and kills everyone? And that's basically what this alien form does. And we're not sure exactly what it is. So let's get through the cast. Obviously, Charlie Sheen's the lead in this, playing the character Jake. So Jake is the form that comes back. Basically, we're not sure what it is or who it is. Is it the brother of the team that gets killed, or is it vice versa? Obviously, the one he's playing as the one that died is called Jamie Hankins or James Hankins. So we get to see some of that in flashback. And so there's a little bit of Rashomon moment there too with it. But he's also playing the Wraith. And it's an interesting character. Obviously, a lot of it is just bodywork. So, I mean, who knows if it's all Charlie Sheen in that outfit? Probably not, because he was gearing up, as it said in the commentary, for Platoon at the time. So he probably didn't have enough time to really spend on the movie itself. But what's great about it is when he is there, it is classic, absolutely classic Charlie Sheen. You're really getting this young, up-and-coming actor getting into his moment, and he does really, really well with it. And of course, with Jacob, he's, you know, racing around on this little motorcycle, dirt bike, whatever it is. It was all the rage, obviously, thanks to Karate Kid. A lot of people were using the little propped up motorbikes at the time. And, you know, what's interesting about that is that it particularly, Charlie Sheen, it sort of emulated what we saw in, Karate Kid with the Cobra Kai were on those. Everyone was doing either BMX, thanks to BMX Bandits. Thank you very much, Nicole Kidman. Look what you've done now. but also, you got to see it with, Karate Kid and other movies later. Obviously, BMX became that huge thing. It was kind of like, obviously, the non-motored version of motocross. And then motocross came out of that as well. So we got that. Matthew Barry playing Billy Hankins, obviously the brother. And again, he's great in this too. What I like about Matthew Barry in this is that, you know, we get to see somebody who's dealing with the grief of losing his brother, losing his best friend in life, if you like, as well. And the way, you know, he's sort of constantly being harassed as well on the top of it. Sherilyn Fenn is Kerry Johnson this, basically the love interest. What's great about Sherilyn is this is before she obviously took off years later and became famous with Twin Peaks. And she's already sort of starting to have that sort of grounding as, you know, a femme fatale, but also just a tough chick, you know, at the time as well. Randy Quaid playing Sheriff Loomis, and he's really good at this. You know, Randy's always interesting. He always puts interesting parts into his roles, particularly if you look at his stuff in the Vacation movies. Obviously, he's really good with working opposite Chevy Chase in those. But Independence Day, all of those, you know, there's just something he threw in there. And my personal favorite is work, of course, as one of the bad guys in The Long Riders. He's really good in that too. Clint Howard plays Rughead. What a name. Rughead. Sounds Aussie, doesn't it? He's really good in this. Clint is obviously the guy who sort of knows all the technical jargon and knows how to fix cars, all that sort of stuff. So he's a big part of Nick Cassavetes' group. And as Packard takes him around to get things fixed, he's kind of starting to see some cracks in the weather there. You know, not exactly what's going on, particularly with Packard. And, this Wraith coming back, this Jacob, you know, maybe there's something there. We also have David Sherrill as Skank, and we also have Jamie Bosian as Gutter Boy. Now, these two are kind of like PM Pod. They're all together all the time and really good at it. They're sort of the foil on the side of course, of Packard Walsh, who's obviously the brains of these bad guys as well. But what I did like was that these two have comedic value as well. And so they're riding around. I think theirs was a Corvette, if I remember right. I don't know, a lot of these American cars. But again, it gets smashed up as well as their other ones in the shop. And of course, we also have, I'm pretty sure it must be a Corvette as well for Packard Walsh's car as well. But again, amazing American muscle cars at the time versus this really bizarre alien-like one as well, too. So there's your main cast. You've got also Griffin O'Neill, Ron O'Neill's son as well, playing Ogie in it as well. There's a couple of others here and there, but that's pretty much the run of your main cast. Now, there's some tragedy that happened on the set of this film as well. And one of the things that, Mike brings up in the commentary, which is interesting, is that, you know, it's hard enough dealing with, obviously, being director producers and stuff like that in the films, but when tragedy happens, you know, that's hard because it's felt across the entire, obviously, filming experience as well. So Bruce Ingram, camera operator, passed away during the filming of one of the car chases. And another crew member was also seriously injured as well, too. So, again, it's sad, but again, you know, these are dangerous stunts when you're doing these things, too. So, you know, there is the chance that things are going to go wrong. The Mad Max films have had the same, and there's been a lot of movies that obviously, you know, people have to remember, people are putting their lives on the line to get that amazing shot, to get that amazing explosion, whatever it is. And it's, again, it's one of those big things in film. Safety is as best we can. Now, The Wraith, as we mentioned earlier, was shot in Arizona and Tucson. And what's interesting about that area for me is, just looking at it, there's little bits of it that look like, you know, westerns. Obviously, the road going off into the distance is kind of like, you know, your yellow brick road in The Wizard of Oz, you know, following that road to wherever it goes. But also, what's about it is, too, is that it reminds me of the Australian outback. The only difference is we've got red sand, red soil out there. So, and things aren't quite as rabid when it comes to growth of the stuff in the soil out there just doesn't grow the same as the United States does out there too. But also, you know, it's a strip of highway that we've seen. I'm pretty sure we've seen that sort of look of the highway in everything from, you know, classic car chases and action films and more. It's, you know, those really, really interesting parts of the US, particularly if you go straight across, you've got these beautiful, breathtaking scenes where, you know, it's basically going off into the distance. It's a fantastic landscape to shoot car chases in. And, you know, everything from the cannonball runs, which I personally think are some of the best out there. Because, again, it's real to a certain extent. That's a real race that takes place. Just don't tell the police, eh? But it's great. And then we're getting to see those muscle cars in this film. And as my dear friends in the US, Kevin Reitzel, I'm sure, will be able to tell us, those great muscle cars, which are, you know, ones that are about the size of the Interceptor. So we're talking about this little bad boy here, folks. No, it's not Knight Rider. It is the Interceptor, micronized. Anyway, but of that size, V8s, big cars, taking on this amazing Dodge, which the Wraith uses, which I believe was a pace car in, obviously, you know, different races and stuff like that in the United States. Now, one great part is, too, we get to see the sheriff start to track down the Wraith, and he starts pulling up at different spots where he's seen Packard Walsh and stuff like that, too. What's interesting is the way he's starting to put things together, and he realizes at the end there's an otherworldly explanation for this. Now, that's where this film is different, okay? And I think one of the big things is there's that X-Files-like factor to it. And the same thing happened, obviously, in High Plains Drifter. We are left to wonder, what was Charlie Sheen really in this? Was he an alien that came back because something was wrong after this kid had died? Assumed the identity, came and actually hunted down those people and just knocked them off. Is it the devil? Is it like the Crow? Eric Draven, right? Eric Draven, obviously, something happened to him. He was wronged, shot, killed. Obviously, his wife as well. Same thing. These are all the questions that are left hanging. And this is why we talk about these great films. We always do. The Crow for years afterwards, I was talking about, you know, to friends. What is it that Eric, is it the actual crow itself is just an embodiment of revenge? Is it that what it is? In this case, I think that's what this is. This is vengeance. You're getting things right. It's balance. It's about not having Packard Walsh walk around and at the end of the day being able to do all this stuff while everyone down here is trying to meet that with balance. And that's what's such an amazing part of that story, is that we don't know. You know? And I think, Kevin's made a good point here. So it's, an alien trying to right things on the Earth, right the wrong things on the Earth, basically. And he's right. I think, you know, particularly that car then gets passed off, obviously, to the brother in this at the end of the film, which makes it interesting. So if you've got, obviously, William Hankins getting that, right, so he gets the keys to the car, does he then, for that time, get the ability to basically have all that alien interaction and be able to right the wrongs that's happened to him? It could be. And I think that's probably the most logical explanation. So interesting that. And again, what happens with, of course, Charlie's character, Jamie Hankins, or in this case, Jacob, does that mean now he gets to have a normal life after that? So it's like it's rebooting. It's almost like he's come down, the Wraith has picked something that's wrong, basically rewound it in some ways, cleared out the pastures and let them have a normal life. What a hell of a character. I mean, that's bloody awesome. But again, also some of the other locations in this too, we get to see Skank and Gutter Boy near the Davis Montan Air Force Base in the airplane graveyard. Now, this is something we've seen, maybe not the same graveyard of airplanes, but we got to see something like that in Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, which is one of my favorite films when it comes to action. It's just goofy action movie in the end of the day. But they really use that area well. Con Air, obviously, is another one that used that sort of location well. But again, it's great because you've got these car chases and stuff hanging around massive cargo planes and military hardware and stuff like that too. So let's talk about the Dodge. The interceptor used in the film was a Chrysler Corporation PP Industries Dodge M4S Turbo Interceptor. It's got an interesting design. Obviously, the engine's in the back of the car. The front of it obviously looks like the boot, like most sports cars these days. And there were a number of the 6 copies of the actual car were made as well. So it's interesting. This car, I've never seen it out here in Australia. We've heard of Dodge. Obviously, we've got Chrysler out here as well in Australia, but not that kind of car. Never seen it. And it still, to me, looks pretty damn realistic and, if anything, futuristic. Even for today, you know, you think about it, that sort of swoop design. Kevin's even mentioned too, so Can't Buy Me Love, it's the airplane graveyard in as well. That's awesome. I do actually remember that. That's fantastic. One of the things too about those graveyards is, I think Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, one was used in that one too, is we don't have that out here in Australia. So, it's the kind of place I would kind of one day like to go and check out, because you just imagine just a breathtaking landscape of everything from F4 Phantoms to, the F100s and all the way up to, of course, the cargo galaxies and all that sort of stuff too. Now, one of the great things about that car is the sort of delta sort of wing design of it, if you like. What I mean is by looking on the side of it, it looks like a dart. So you imagine the aerodynamics of this hitting that speed, particularly about the hairpin turns that we're seeing in the S-bends and stuff like that through some of those places in Arizona, just beautiful. And up against those muscle cars, it's enough of juxtaposition to really push it. Now, one of the other locations that's really interesting in this that we get to see the Hankins boys in, and of course is Big K's Burgers, which was not a real restaurant at all. And it's interesting is that a lot of the stuff that they're putting in there is the real McCoy. So I'm sure they were taught how to make hamburgers, fries, all that sort of stuff on the location too. Now, one of the most important parts of this chat, of course, folks, is the soundtrack. So it being an 80s one, it's huge. And I've got to mention this because Kevin's popped up in the comments with it. The Wraith has one of my 80s, 90s movie crushes, and that is, of course, Cheryl and Fenn. Mate, you and me both. She is awesome. Yes. And of course, one of the best elements, of course, in Twin Peaks, you've got to go and check it out. So let's go through some of the list. We got some really classic people on the soundtrack, so I'll have to check this out if I can find it. The music score itself was by Michael Hoenig and J. Peter Robinson. Now, of course, with that, you get a whole lot of songs. And here we go, folks. We've got Ozzy Osbourne with Secret Loser. We have Stan Bush with Hearts Versus Heads. Now, Stan Bush is the mother of all mullet music. I'm telling you now, folks, he is huge. Everything from Bloodsport, that Kumite, Kumite, all that stuff, it's all there. So it's amazing. It is. To me, it's not that. To me, it's a comic book come to life with cars. You know, if anything, it's kind of, if you like G.I. Joe, this is your movie. Why? Because it has lots of vehicles, but the characters are so out there and fast and, you know, again, living that sort of cartoonish sort of edge. I think that's what makes this film so appealing. It's really, really well done. Now, the film did come out on Laserdisc by Image Entertainment, and it was also in 2003 on DVD. Whether this version that I have is that, I have no idea. This one says nothing of that. I think this is a more recent pressing than 2003. But you do get quite a bit of stuff on it. You get audio commentary with Mike Marvin. You get one chat with Clint Howard. And it's called Rughead Speaks. So that's quite good. You also got the Ride of the Future talking about, obviously, the cars, the Turbo Interceptor as a vehicle. You get the trailer. You get it in widescreen presentation. You get it in 2.0. Digital Dolby. Surely there's a 5.1 of this somewhere, hey? I'm sure they've spent some money on that somewhere. Is it on Blu-ray? Who knows? I mean, there's a couple of Blu-rays that have 1.0 sound, so who knows? Now, most important thing, of course, is the Hellenbeck scale. So, what are we going to give it on the Hellenbeck scale, folks? We're going to give it a solid 4. That's right. The only reason I give it 4 is because I think, first of all, it's a much, you know, enjoyable watch than any other car movie of the time. It's got a little bit of, you know, I think sci-fi in there, just enough for the time. But I think the only thing that's holding back, I think I need more Charlie Sheen in the movie. Even to sort of creep out the bad guys, the fact that this guy's back and he's ready to take vengeance. I think that needs to be more prominent in the film. It's the only thing I've got against the movie, I think. But apart from that, it's really, really well done. You can see where The Crow has obviously been influenced, and this is basically High Plains Drifter all the way through. So it's a solid 4, folks. And that brings us to the end of, obviously, episode number 76 here at the Lethal Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next time on the show, where hopefully we'll be chatting to Kevin Reisel. And, of course, we're going to be chatting him about Runaway and the amazing Quigley Down Under.
G'day folks, hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also, Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery, and of course, Picard, plus the Orville. But also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet Podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up to there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.